by for Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with your host, Drew Kirby.
Hey, this is Luke Holmes.
I am Morgan Wallen.
I'm Riley Green.
I'm Travis Denning.
Hey, I'm Aaron Lewis.
Hey, it's Luke Bryan.
I'm Tim McGraw.
What's up? This is Ian Munsick.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Welcome into Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors, the show dedicated to what we love here in Wyoming, hunting, fishing, and loving every day, getting out and enjoying what we have right in our backyard. And each week we bring in Janet Millick, the representative from Wyoming Game and Fish Department, to give information. You know, there's a lot of regulations and there's a lot of questions that come in about the hunting and fishing industry here in Wyoming. And Janet, it's always nice for us to be able to pass on information. And I've heard over and over and over the last few weeks as I've been around how much people enjoy finding things out that they've never known before about the outdoors.
Good morning, Drew. It is so great to be on again. As always, we love to get these questions that come in, and people don't realize that we are here to answer those questions. It's as simple as a phone call to the office, and hopefully you can get your answer. But if not, and you want to put it through your mobile app, those questions are great to come in. And if not, we're coming up with questions that we continually get, like here in the main Casper Regional Office for our entire district. And some of those questions lately have been around wild turkeys.
Yeah, we are in the middle of wild turkey season, goes throughout the month. And, you know, there aren't as many people in depth on knowledge of turkey hunting. You know, they like deer, they like antelope, they like elk and moose, and they like duck and goose, but you don't really hear much about the wild turkey hunters until recently. Some people have been asking some questions, so we had to get the big dog.
That's right. You know, one of my most favorite things is wild turkey fajitas. And I think Joe may have been even the one to turn me on to that recipe. I can't remember. It's been a while. But we have on the show with us today Joe Sandrini, who is the Newcastle District Wildlife Biologist. He's been a member of the Wyoming Game and Fish Department for many years and is also a member of the National Wild Turkey Federation and kind of our representative with them. And he knows all things turkey.
Joe, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Drew.
Wild turkeys, a very interesting subject here in Wyoming because they haven't always been here, but it was back in like, what, the 1930s, I think, when they were introduced to certain parts of the state?
Yeah, it was in the mid-1930s, I think 1935, plus or minus. And we traded New Mexico some sage grouse for wild turkeys. And those initial wild turkeys were brought up and released in Laramie Peak area. And they did fairly well. They're the Merriam's subspecies, which there's four subspecies of wild turkeys in the continental United States. And the Merriam's is adapted to higher, drier elevation, ponderosa pine type habitats, which we have some in the Black Hills and other and Laramie Peak and other parts of the state. Wild turkeys were not native to Wyoming, probably because of the winter severity and that can limit populations at times. So that initial Laramie Peak population expanded. They did fairly well. And from there, we moved birds up into the Black Hills to the northeast of Sundance on Redwater Creek. About the same time south, and this was in the late 1950s, about 1957 or so. And about the same time, South Dakota was also moving birds into the Black Hills. At that time, nationwide, wild turkey numbers were very low. And since then, the restoration efforts have brought turkey numbers up to probably well above what they were historically across the continental United States. We now have wild turkeys in areas where we didn't, including all 48 states, except technically Alaska, although I do know there are a few sort of unrecognized populations in Southeast Alaska, but that's a different state for a different day. Now I'm rambling on.
Here in the state, you said they were introduced in the Laramie Peak area and then taken to the Black Hills. Does the Laramie Peak area still have a large population of birds, or have they stretched all throughout? Because we obviously have quite a few birds here in Casper, but does that area still have a large amount of birds?
Yeah, there's a fairly good population there. We've moved birds around the state since that initial introduction into Laramie Peak and then the Black Hills. And so we have them along the east front of the Bighorns. We have them in the Bighorn Basin down in southeast Wyoming. We're starting to get a few more south of Laramie. We're even getting, we have turkeys now up in the Cody area, Meteetse area. And there's even places now that if you go wild turkey hunting in the spring, you need to carry your bear spray with you.
On average, how do the birds here in Wyoming fare with the weather and the climate?
So most of the occupied wild turkey habitat that we have in the state did not experience the winter that the central and southwest corners of the state did. The Miriams are adapted to foraging on ponderosa pine seeds in the winter. That's their primary food source in their sort of their native habitat. In Wyoming, because of the snow depths and cold, most of the turkeys tend to winter in and around farm and ranch complexes where they're either directly or indirectly supplementally fed, meaning some good rancher guy will put out some corn or something to feed him and get him through the winter, or else they'll just make a nuisance of themselves and get in there and get into his grain hay or grain that he's feeding his cattle. And what I've seen over the last 30 years, especially in the Black Hills, is it seems that more and more of the birds are getting into those farm and ranch situations earlier in the winter. We don't see as many birds wintering out naturally. And turkeys are kind of, in a way, sort of like big game deer and elk, in that there's some sexual segregation in the herds or flocks, ever what you want to call them. And so in the winter, you tend to see large flocks of hens and poults, young of the year. And then you have the older toms that they often will winter out a little bit more, coming into the barnyard complexes a little more hesitantly. Although I've seen that sort of change over the years too. And where we now see more big toms, gobblers coming in and wintering in those situations. And what can happen, especially when food is limited, is those bigger toms are more aggressive, and they will fight off the younger toms and hens for food. And so what we've actually seen in some areas in the state, especially in river bottom populations that are very habitat limited, is that you get these winter flocks coming into these farm and ranch compounds, and the males do, big toms get do a lot better job of getting fed. There's not adequate hunting in the spring, and so those tom numbers build up, and eventually they outcompete the hens, and so you end up with a bunch of tom turkeys, and that doesn't do real well when it comes to reproduction and producing young.
Can you talk a little bit about that and why it might be super annoying to people who live in a community and the damage that turkeys might cause?
Yeah. So as I say, you know, the turkeys aren't native here and they are going to go where the food is. Okay. And the root of all nuisance or depredation issues with wild turkeys is they're trying to find something to eat. And so they have moved into towns where you have bird feeders. Turkeys are generalists. So they'll eat seeds, they'll eat grass, they'll eat bugs. They're gonna pick up what they can. They like dog food. Some of them learn to really like dog food. And so they get in these areas. And in town, you got plenty of food sources. You have a lack of predators. And so they tend to do very well. And then they get habituated to humans. They're not quite so worried about them. Hunger's a powerful thing. I mean, think about it. You get those elk on the refuge, they'll tolerate people in the winter because they're feeding them. But you get there in the summer and it's a different story when they're out in the wild. Kind of the same with wild turkeys. And turkeys, I mean, they forage on the ground, they nest on the ground, but they roost in trees. So that means they spend the night in trees. So they'll find a tree that they liked. It has a kind of branch structure and things that make for a good sleeping spot for a turkey. And they'll fly up there just before sundown and roost and poop. And so we tend to get complaints about turkey droppings on cars and roofs and things. So, yeah, is that kind of what you were wondering about, yeah. Janet?
Absolutely.
Well, Joe, what can be done about a flock of turkeys that have taken over neighborhoods as they have here in Casper?
Okay, good question. Unless you, there's a couple options. The first is discouraging roosting. So if you're having a problem with them roosting, say they you have a big tree in your backyard that they like, what you can do is just as they get up into the roost, just as it's getting dark, if you're able to haze them out of the roof, the roost, either some folks use high pressured water. In downtown Casper, you can't really use pyrotechnics and things very, very easily, but you flush them out of the tree, just as they're getting comfortable for the night. And a lot of times, if you do that several days in a row, pretty soon they're like, man, I don't want to spend the night there, because every time I do, I get chased out of there and I got to find a new spot. That moves the problem down the road. So then they find another spot to roost and somebody else ends up having to do the same thing. The next sort of level of control would be trap and translocation. And that's something that as a department, we like to try to avoid, just because of the stress that it puts on the animals, the manpower strain, the time commitments. But you can trap and translocate turkeys fairly successfully. That normally has to be done when the temperatures are colder, so the birds don't overheat when you move them. And you need to have a place to take them. So when it's cold in the winter, when it's time to trap turkeys, there's not always a lot of places to take them because they are probably going to end up wintering in somebody else's backyard or some rancher's ranch compound. The next level of sort of control would be lethal removal. And that's been done in some places. Of course, that's acceptable to some people and not to others. But hunting is the primary management tool. That's how we manage populations in Wyoming, whether it's deer, turkeys, elk, or whatever. And so in a municipality situation, yeah, we can't have an open hunting season. There's good reasons for that. And so we can structure that hunting, take by professionals under special permits and that kind of thing. So there's a range of options. There's a lot of other things out there, especially for agricultural depredation and nuisance issues. In fact, the Western Association of Wildlife Agencies, the Wild Turkey Working Group, right now is working on putting a paper together, looking at all the different depredation and nuisance issues that turkeys cause and what the different techniques are for dealing with those and what the pluses and minuses are of those different ways of handling nuisance and depredation wild turkeys.
So, and since Joe is not from Casper, I will chime in a little bit here on some of the things that we're seeing in the community. One of the main things that he left off the list is not feeding turkeys, right? We have a lot of people within the community who are intentionally feeding them. You know, their goal is to help the wildlife through the winter. They feel like they need additional forage and food. And so that, of course, draws them in. And so that's one of the number one things you can do is make sure your neighbor is, you know, picking up the dog food, not feeding the turkeys, because it does just bring them in. And unfortunately, they don't just stay in your neighbor's yard or in your yard if you're the one that is feeding them. And so it is great to have them come in for a little bit. It's neat to see them. It's neat to feel like you're helping wildlife, but it is not fun for long.
Right. And
that's a good point, Janet. And that's what I was trying to stress, that food sources are the root of all the nuisance problems with turkeys.
Awesome, Joe and Janet. Thank you guys so much. And of course, if you have any questions for Game and Fish, we know we talk a lot about these turkeys, but the question keeps coming up. So thanks again. We'll be back with Brian Woodward from Rocky Mountain Discount Sports.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
You're in Brian, Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. And Brian, I'm loving the weather we've been having. And then I blinked, and then, boy, it might be a little bit different because, it may or may not mean winter is still here.
Well, we got spoiled this last week with some just beautiful 60, 70 degree days. And of course, I had to work all week and did not get the boat out and was planning on taking it out today. And we ended up doing some other projects.
So, you know what I did on this week is I went out to Stuckenhoff's a couple of different times and shot my gun that I had built and, you know, trying to get her all sighted in and everything. And one of the things that I worry about is the ammo level because, you know, you just shoot through so many, you know, shots, but what's the store shelves looking like?
Shelves are packed full. The aisles are drooping with weight off the lead. So far, it's been good. And, I mean, I'm optimistic. I mean, we're finally getting stuff in that we ordered back in 20, 21, 22.
Oh, yeah.
So those are back orders that are starting to come through. So that's actually helped fill the shelves. But, you know, these manufacturers are still, you know, not everything's available. And they're still struggling with powder is definitely going to be an issue this year. There's a shortage and it's a for real deal. So I think, you know, if you got a few extra bucks in your pocket and the opportunity to pick up an extra box of 22 shells or whatever it is that you shoot, I don't think it's a bad idea to stock up a bit.
What about for those that do the reloading? I mean, you mentioned that powder is an issue, but is that for reloaders too?
Yeah, and you know, we're seeing some guys that are just kind of having to go through the books and look at different recipes to see which powder we have that might work with their 300 Win Mag or whatever. So, just because you're able to use, you know, H1000 or Rotombo or Varget or whatever it was that you were using, some of those are getting difficult to get. We've been really fortunate. We've had pretty good shipments so far this year, but some of those H1000s and some of those other more popular powders have definitely been tough to get.
So obviously if shooting is in your realm for the summer, maybe you're going to do a lot of skeet shooting or maybe you're going to go and be part of the trap shoot with HD Outdoors coming up in May. I mean, you got to bring your own ammo, so you might as well get stocked up now.
Yeah, and we're, you know, this time of year, a lot of people just want to get out and shoot clay targets, you know. Mm-hmm. So the shotgun shells, you know, are been pretty good supply on shotgun shells, especially for the 7.5 and 8 shot that most guys use for a trap and skeet. But, you know, it's just hard to foresee what's going on. And now I'm not, you know, trying to be out telling everybody to like panic and, you know, zombies are coming, but we've seen it before and how fast it dried up in the past. And, you know, if it's shooting is something you like to do, just make sure you've got enough to get you through the summer.
Yeah. And then of course, you know, if it's something where rifle next season for elk or big game, you might want to go ahead and get those now while the shelves are full.
Yeah. And I've been telling people that for a long time, you know, here is that, you know, if you buy a new rifle or you have a certain cartridge that you really like, your gun shoots well, I would at this point try to buy a lifetime supply. You know, that might be 2 or 3 boxes or it might be 10 boxes, but if you see it on the shelf, it's probably a good idea to get it because a lot of these manufacturers are having to change their loads based on availability of, you know, the primers or the powder. And even though you were getting a certain load before, we're seeing a lot of those older SKUs being discontinued and being replaced with a bullet or powder level that they can, you know, currently get.
Do you see, you know, you and I have talked before, I was having problems with my gun cycling and ejecting the shell and everything.
We're not going to talk about that.
And it's all fixed and ready to go. But when you say finding the shell that maybe you found that worked the best, how do you go about that? I mean, is it just kind of
trial and error? It's, you know, buy a box at a time, or, you know, a lot of the guys that are hand loading stuff, they'll load 5 rounds, you know, of a certain load, and they'll do that with different loads, different powders, different bullets, and they'll see which ones group the best, which one they get the best velocity out of, and then once they've determined which one performs the best for them, then they're going in and reproducing bunches of them. So unfortunately, if you're not a hand loader, which I'm not, you know, I just kind of I start with like Hornady's. It always generally produces really well for me. But I got some guys that really like Winchester Silvertip. So when you find the one that works for you, I would make sure that, you know, you stock up and take care of what you need for the season.
Well, now would be a great time to get in here and check them out at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. And, you know, that isn't where it ends. You know, your shelves are really full in a lot of different departments. And we were just talking about folks coming in and getting new fishing poles and getting ready for the fishing season.
Yeah, and we have a ton of fishing poles in right now. Our baits are restocked up there. If you're pulling out your reels and it's time to re-spool those, you know, we can strip the line off and put new line on there for you. 5 cents a yard, pretty cheap, pretty easy to do. Don't have to yell at the kid for not holding the pencil straight or whatever the case was. But yeah, we've got a ton of tackle. We've got a lot of new tackle. We've got some great stuff, and it looks like the fishery reports are looking good. So I think we're going to have a fantastic summer.
Of course, the camping department, and you know, our weather lately has been 70 a couple of days, and then 40 and 6 inches of snow and more snow. But that's typical Wyoming springtime. So don't let that stop you from maybe coming in, getting your hiking supplies. You got to get your ORV tags if you don't have those yet.
And state park permits, we've got those as well.
And that's changed a little bit, hasn't it?
Well, they've got a new system, so even though you had an account last year, you have to open up a new account and re-register the account. So
okay, and you can do that here at the store, right?
You can do it right here at the store.
All right, come on in and see them here, Rocky Mountain Discount Sports.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Drew and Brian back at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, where, boy, there's lots going on right now as we're all getting ready for fishing and fishing tournaments, which the Tough Man is at the end of the month, I believe.
27th.
And then, of course, the Wyoming Walleye Stampede is the first couple weekends, the 11th and 12th, I believe, of May. And then, boy, we just get into the full on. So hopefully we'll have weather like we did this past week during that, because last year it was cold and rainy. And
we were still digging out a 3 foot of snow out of that one storm this week. I mean, this is the week that snowstorm hit, and we're just like, how are we even going to get around town? It was horrible.
So hopefully that'll change, and you know, a lot of fishing will be done. And you know, one other thing that going on right now is a couple of months ago, Bernard, the silver fox, passed away of a heart attack, and all of his friends kind of came together, and you know, you kind of led everybody together. You had a memorial shoot not long ago out at the bird farm, and then it kind of evolved into a snowball effect after that.
Put together a little memorial hunt with some of the family and friends that had hunted with Bernard. And then a good friend of mine, Ron Salveson, who used to own Knapp Supply downtown, he was really good friends with Bernard, and he started talking to the college about starting a scholarship under Bernard's name. We did a little fundraising at the shoot just to try to seed the pot to get that scholarship going. Then it kind of snowballed from there. As we started working with the college about the criteria of the scholarship, it's going to be called the Bernard Ambrosino Memorial Hospitality Scholarship. And for anyone going into the field of hospitality, tourism, or possibly business, we're going to favor kids that have gone through the PIC program out at Pathways. They have a culinary program out there, so that's kind of fitting. Also catering towards employees of Silver Fox, but then it'll be open to anybody that's pursuing those fields. As we're working with the foundation up at the Casper College, on March 22nd, the legislature passed a bill that allocated $1 million to 8 of the community colleges throughout Wyoming. They dedicated $1 million for matching funds for any scholarship programs out there.
Wow.
And so every dollar that we're raising right now is being matched by the state. And so we're probably close to 45 or 50,000. And then that money is going to be matched as well. And the more we raise, the more scholarships and the bigger the amounts of the scholarships we can actually allow to go out each year.
And this will be an ongoing scholarship, which is really kind of cool. And one thing that a lot of people may not know about Bernard was he loved the outdoors. And you said that they did the memorial shoot. Well, he had birds on reserve at the riverbed.
Yeah, Riverbend allows you to buy bird packages, and he had a bird package that he hadn't even really tapped into. And Bernard was that guy that, for one, you couldn't keep him still. You know, I think we've talked about, you know, hunting, you know, duck and goose hunting, and he could be out there for about, you know, 2 hours and it's like, I got to get back to the restaurant. You know, whether it was hunting, whether it was fishing, we did a lot of bike riding up on Muddy Mountain, chasing grouse, sage chickens, you name it. We did a lot of things together, and he loved the outdoors and was passionate about it. So I don't know. We just felt that this scholarship was a great way to honor someone that's been in the community for 44 years and has employed as many people as he has and really touched a lot of people's lives. You know, everyone from, you know, a dishwasher to back end managers or the guys out front that you see when you walk in and they're shaking your hands and calling you by name. They're trying to keep that legacy going, and this scholarship will allow that perpetual scholarship to go on for the next 100 years.
And what I really love about it is, you know, hospitality and here tourism and hotels and restaurants, it's a huge part of, you know, the culture here, because people fly in or, you know, to go hunting and fishing. And
absolutely.
And you don't know how many millions of people Bernard has fed over the 44 years that he has been in Casper.
So. Well, you know, we were talking the other day with another friend of ours, and you know, you can't really walk through or go through this town without seeing a help wanted sign on a building, right? Mm-hmm. And to find a quality chef and to have somebody that's willing to train quality chefs, you know, is really important. So to have this scholarship available and then have some you know, different courses available at the colleges that are going to gear people towards learning how to cook. You know, the art, yeah, of cooking, you know, like you talked about, you know, my son, he's like, yeah, well, we're going out to dinner because, you know, I have my girlfriend, or, you know, yeah, my son loves cooking. But, you know, I think that the art of cooking is kind of, you know, on the way out.
Right. Especially like air fryers and microwaves, mm-hmm, and easy ways to make it with frozen food. So it really is a cool opportunity. And you can come in and see Brian here at the Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, or go over to our station's app, and we have a QR code that you can scan and find out more info that way.
Yeah, and the QR code really works actually pretty nice. When you scan that code, it asks for how much you want to donate, and then there's a drop-down menu. There is a handful of different scholarships in there. Choose the one that says Bernard Ambrosino. I think it might even say Silver Fox on that fund, but that money will go directly towards them. They'll send you a receipt. I did one the other day, and you can use Venmo. Use, you know, credit, yeah, card, debit card, whatever you want on that. So pretty easy. I think even PayPal has been on there. So a lot of different ways to make a payment, and it'll go straight to the college. Or if you prefer to write a check, you can also write a check to the college. I am collecting checks here at the store at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. So if you want to drop them off here, we'll certainly make sure that those checks get up there.
You know, Bernard being such an outdoor lover, he loved to go to Glendoe and walleye fish. And, you know, he'd be geared up just as much as the rest of us now to get down there. And have you heard much about the fishing down at the Glendoe?
You know, the weather has been a little hit or miss for guys. You know, there's been a couple good days. There's been a couple really windy blow days that guys hadn't really been able to get a lot of good fishing in, especially when the bite's a little bit deeper, which I've heard it's, you know, anywhere from 15 to 25 foot right now. I've heard up to 30 foot, really. And, you know, when you're fishing that deeper water, the having sensitivity on your rod and is really important, especially when you're fishing minnows that deep. And when you've got that kind of wind, you know, you can't feel the bow on your line. So,
right.
So that's been fishing well. Alcova has still been fishing well. Talk to some guys that have been up on Pathfinder. They're catching fish up there, you know, kind of a lot of the same cookie cutter, you know, fish. But I did hear a guy that had, you know, caught like 6 or 7 24 to 28 inch fish.
Wow.
So it sounds like wherever you can go, you're gonna hopefully be able to catch some fish.
Yeah, and hopefully the weird, crazy weather that we've been having. And really, it's one of those you can't even plan for, because they give you the, well, it could be this or it could be 9 feet.
And you can't even be mad about it because it's still spring. I mean,
right.
it's Wyoming. I mean,
yeah.
You know, we talked about it. Like, you know, if you sit at home, you'll never know, you know, and you know, maybe you drive down to Glendoe and the wind's blowing like mad here, but it's good down there, or maybe vice versa. But heck, if you get down there, go have some breakfast at Kim's, you know?
Yeah, right. Well, and you know, we have talked to the folks there at the new marina, B&A, they're about 4 or 3 weeks from opening, mm-hmm, that. And then as soon as that opens, it's when the walleye stampede is rolling through there. So there's lots of opportunities and lots of great local people to support. And, you know, you think about the Bernard scholarship and how you're kind of helping groom the next person that, you know, maybe owns the marina or someone that wants to own one of the big restaurants here.
Yeah, you just never know. I mean, there's a lot of people that, you know, that have come through me in retail settings that, you know, I would like to think that maybe own their own businesses now or working for a bigger business that, you know, the skills that they learned through me are, mm-hmm. have helped. And I know that that's a fact with the individuals that have gone through Silver Fox and have worked under Bernard because he runs a quality operation and they do a phenomenal job of training their staff. So not everybody can work for everybody, right? So when people do move on, you just wish them the best. And I think, you know, he's definitely touched the lives of a lot of people in town.
Well, it's a great way to honor a great outdoorsman and a great chef. So go over to our website or our app and scan that QR code and help the cause for future generations of chefs here in the Casper area. So we've got more coming up in minutes. Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Thanks again for listening, and remember, you can always listen 24/7 on demand to all of our episodes in this radio station's app. Just click that on demand button. Moving along today, we're dipping our toe into waters that we haven't ever experienced or talked about on this show, and that's bow fishing in Wyoming. The Wyoming Association of Bow Fishing is an organization. Tom Webster is the president of that association, and he's trying to get people interested in bow fishing. And Tom, I appreciate you joining us on the program. And what all does a person need if they're going to go bow fishing? Let's start out with the basics.
You just need a bow, which I recommend, you know, for a safety aspect, buy the right equipment for the right job. I see a lot, I do this on social media when I see newcomers come on. They're like, well, I got this old hunting bow and I want to do this. I was like, no, just sell that hunting bow or get rid of it. The cam styles are different because they're like with a hunting bow, you have to pull to your backstop and get to that position and compare it to a hunting bow, which is kind of designed like a recurve kind of where you can like call it snap shooting. You don't got to draw all the way back to shoot the bow. So there's two different style cams. Also, the arrows we use are, you know, they're a 7/16 solid fiberglass, and they don't have the play as like a carbon arrow does. And so if you use your higher pound hunting bows, your risks of once that torque hits that type of arrow to shatter it. Because, I mean, you hit a rock with these, our bows, and they shatter. And that's just a safety aspect is what I try to do. You can get a decent setup for, you know, a couple $100, but sometimes going the cheap route you see guys go, it's not really the answer, in my opinion, as a safety aspect for everything.
Well, and like with most everything, if you buy cheap, you're going to get cheap results. You know, you may only get 2 or 3 times out of a cheap bow, but if you put a little money into your setup, you're definitely going to have a better opportunity.
Yeah. And you don't got to do like what, you know, some of us do. We have, you know, the $1,500, $2,000 custom lever bow from like Oneida or these places like that, or the ones that I use is a Dead Wake Archery. And, you know, spending $200-$300 on like a PSE D3 or something like that that's designed for bow fishing, and I've used them before for my charter outfit. Like, they're a great little bow, and you don't have to break the bank for them, but they're the right bow for the job that you're doing. And then it's just customized for the types of reels you want to get. Like, the ones that you see a lot of the bottle reels with the line, they're really good. They're foolproof. It just goes to preference compared to what I like to use as a spin style. It looks like a big push button reel. To me, you can fight the fish a little bit better. So it just preference and how you want to do it, like everything else.
When it comes to the tip of the arrow, I mean, you're not using the same broadhead that you would use for an elk or a deer. It's a little different, isn't it?
That varies too. Like, there's ones, well, it just depends on the area you go to. There's ones that are called a TNT, and they're like a forged steel with big prongs. You have to actually push the tip through and then pull it off completely. In areas like around here where you're shooting around a lot of rocks sometimes, say like Pathfinder, where it's just a big rocky area, those tips hold up a lot better compared to the muzzy, just a normal two-prong, which if you're shooting in areas with lots of cattails, you're going to have to go with the ones that has a minimum grabbage, because like you shoot some of these into a area, and it's hard to get them out. And it's like pulling up an anchor. Like, even at, say, you fish at Glendale, there's areas where the clay is really bad, right, and you sink an arrow in the clay like a boat anchor. When it comes to tips, it goes to preference and what you want to do. But as during the summer, as the water gets hotter, the fish gets softer. You want to get something that'll not put a big entrance hole, but have a hold on the inside or the backside without ripping a giant hole in the fish at the same time. Then you lose a lot of them.
So where in Wyoming can you actually bow fish?
Everywhere. It kind of seems where the Platte River drainage, and there's a few kind of up in the Snake River and the areas you get over into like the high mountain regions, unless they were put in there. They're just, you're not going to find them up in those areas. I know the Green River has some in from like the gorge spot.
I'm sure every reservoir and waterway has their own regulations. So you have to be up on the regulations and make sure that you're following those to be able to do this.
Yeah, pretty much it's any place that has carp in any lake or whatever. You just got to pay attention to like the locals about like talking about dealing with the state. Them trying to have more regulations on what you can and can't use, and like as far as leeways. But the one point they were trying to say is it was for public safety, but we don't shoot around anybody. If there's swimming activity, there's gonna be no fish around, so we're not even close to where the public is. And it just, but as far as the public, every time, you know, you're out on the water or whatever, and there's kids, they come up and ask you what's going on. Like when you're out in the lights, and they call it the alien boat, you know. And we had a funny story up in Ocean Lake. We had a tournament up there, and we were all out kind of floating around. The fishing was slow, so we're all kind of ganged up, and we're just talking and hanging out. And next thing we see all these police lights and everything showing up, rushing to the lake. Apparently, some lady called freaking out, saying the aliens were landing on Ocean Lake because she's never seen that style of boat before. The next day, when we were doing our weigh-ins, we had the sheriffs down there, and they were all interested, and they were just laughing, like, yeah, here's the aliens.
So when you're out on the water and you're looking around to find where these carp are hanging out, what are you looking for?
It depends on the time of year, because early on, you want to find the shallow, muddy bays, pretty much. You'll see them in there concentrated for the most part, and it just depends, because you... Like the common carp and the mirror carp, you know, they're two different. They're kind of the same, but they're in the same species. They act totally different. And then as the water warms up, you won't find the carp as shallow because the water's too hot. As you get to some other lakes with like the mirror carp, they travel in, like kind of like geese. It's kind of, they'll travel in schools like that. And early mornings, you'll get in some places. Like I've been on a Pathfinder up where the river comes in over there on the west end, and it's as far as you can see. There's 5,000-6,000 fish on the surface feeding, and we call them pods. But that's where they start causing the problems, is because when they start feeding on the bottom, all that mass, and they just blow all that silt and everything. And there's some areas when it can cause oxygen deprivation, and then like blue G out, you know, algae growth because of the oxygen and everything. So getting rid of them is actually very helpful.
We're talking to Tom Webster of the Wyoming Bowfishing Association. And Tom, how long has the association been around?
I think it's 10 years. I first started with the association in the summer of 2020 when I bought my boat, started guiding, and did my first tournament with them. That's when Rusty was like, hey, we got this association, you know, and he reached out to me and was there anything we can do to help? You know, he's like, he was the only guide in Wyoming at the time. And then I started doing it. So him and I are the only two bow fishing guides in the state that officially that we have, you know, websites and stuff that I know of. And then he reached out, and then I got involved with the Bow Fishing Association of America, which is a national kind of, we help each other with regulations and everything and kind of education purposes. I stepped up as vice president 2 years ago, and then our president stepped down last year, and I stepped up, and I want to grow it to more where we have, like other states have, like Michigan, to where that we have special events for like kids and educational purposes. And my plan is having three tournaments this year, one in May, one in June, and one in July. one of the main goals I'm pushing for is having an education for like a youth bow fishing day. We tried it one time. We had 10 kids come out. They all got a prize and everything. But in the end, I want to create a trailer and an event where we have bows and kids, every kid can show up from any walks of life, learn how to shoot a bow, archery safety, boating safety and everything. And then go out on the water and actually go have fun and shoot some fish and then come in and have like a barbecue and do a thing. There's a youth association that has a youth world's championship in Oklahoma every year, which this year I'm trying to take a group of kids down there this year, and we're in the process of fundraising for that so we can go down there in June.
Now, I know you guys have a Wyoming Bowfish Association private Facebook page, and can anyone go and join up on that page?
Yeah, it's free. It's free right now. You can join. It's the Bowfishing Association of Wyoming. So you just add us on there, and we'll just add you on and all this. That's where most of the stuff. But I try to post some videos in other places, like we have these other Wyoming groups, but sometimes when you post the bow fishing stuff, it seems like, I don't know, other people they don't allow it for some reason, or they don't like it and they'll take it down. I was like, I don't get it. It's the same thing here in Wyoming. We're trying to do the same thing.
Well, you can go search Cowboy Bow Fishing Charters. That's your guiding service, and that can, they can get in contact with you through that website and that the Facebook page. The great way to get in contact with you and learn more.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, if you're new and you just want to go out too, like, you know, I said, there's two of us, like Rusty owns one. If I can't do it, I hook people up with Rusty, depending on the types of areas. And we don't turn anybody away. Like, we've even had people that bank shoot, as long as you show up. I mean, it's nice thing about the bow fishing stuff. It's fun for everybody. There's no, like, you know, I've taken little kids out. You know, that's the fun part for me is just taking the people I've never done it before and seeing how just fun it is and doing it that way. Like, I, on my spare times, you know, I'm taking, you know, I live here in Guernsey. I take kids out a few times just on my own because it's just fun to take them out and just watch them have fun. And that's the more aspect about doing what I do. I mean, I love to shoot, but it's more fun to watch other people enjoy it. And
that's awesome. Well, Tom, and I appreciate you chatting with me today, and I sure hope that everything goes well with your tournaments and the future of bow fishing in Wyoming.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Drew. Thanks for having me. And if you want to do another show here middle of summer or whatever and see how things going, I'll be more than happy to keep an update on how things going as well. So,
very cool, Tom. Thank you so much. You can go to Cowboy Bow Fishing Charters on social media and find out more about Tom and the Wyoming Bowfish Association. As always, if you missed any of this show today, you can go back and listen tomorrow morning on demand on this radio station's app. Have a great week.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with Drew Kirby. If you have a question, want to make a comment, or have an idea for a show topic, message us on the My Country mobile app. Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.